You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Ed Robertson welcoming you to TV Confidential, radio talk show about television that will play part two of our conversation with Walter Koenig in our second hour. Walter Koenig, the actor known around the world as Mr. Chekhov on the original Star Trek and the first seven Star Trek movies, and Alfred Bester on Babylon 5. Walter Koenig will join us in our second hour. We hope you stay tuned for that in the meantime. And speaking of Star Trek, or at least the next generation of Star Trek shows, we'll begin our first hour by playing part two, or I guess part three, of our conversation with television writer, producer Paul Robert Coyle. Paul is with us via Zoom. Paul's credits in television as a television writer and in some cases as a story editor or producer include Streets of San Francisco, Barnaby Jones, Simon and Simon, Jake and the Fat Man, Xena, Warrior Princess, Hercules, The Incredible Journeys, Stephen King's The Dead Zone, sort of. We'll get into that later on. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek The Next Generation, and many other popular TV shows. Paul's memoir, Swords, Starships, and Superheroes from Star Trek to Xena to Hercules, A TV Writer's Life Scripting the Stories of Heroes, is not only the story of Paul's 40-plus year journey as a writer, story editor, and producer for television, but includes many useful lessons on how to pursue a career as a professional writer, whether you want to write for television or any other form of writing. Swords, Starships, and Superheroes, available in paperback and as an ebook through our friends at Jacobs Brown Media Group. You can also find it at Amazon.com, other online retailers. Paul, welcome back to our program.
Well, thank you, Ed. It's good to be here for another part of our never-ending interview here.
Yes. Well, as I like to say, epic length. And like good epics, you know, there's a lot of drama, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, but it flows and it moves. And as I say, there are a lot of things about you that I didn't know about before, and there are a lot of things about the industry that I didn't know before. We'll get to that in just a second. But when Paul visited us in December and just after the first of the year, we focused mostly on the first part of Paul's career, which is where he wrote for Private Eye shows, for Quinn Martin, for Crazy Like a Fox, and how he spent the first half of his career as a writer. But like many smart people, Paul learned how to adapt as the industry adapt, and that is how he ended up writing for sci-fi and fantasy in the 90s and early 2000s. And along the way, and this kind of bridges the two halves of your career, Paul, your introduction to sci-fi and Star Trek The Next Generation in particular had to do with one of the relationships you built in the early part of the 80s when you worked with Michael Piller.
Yes. Well, Mike Piller was story editor on Simon and Simon. And prior to that, I had written all those QM shows and various shows, but then after about 5 or 6 years, the industry changed. The format of dramatic shows, they became dramedies and ensemble pieces, and comedy dramas and so forth. And my kind of writing on shows like Streets in San Francisco was considered old-fashioned. So I had to reinvent myself. And I wrote a bunch of specs for different shows on TV at the time, one of which was Simon and Simon. And Mike Piller, who was story editor over there, bought that script, and then I came on and I wrote a second one on assignment. So we established a relationship and a friendship at the time. And then I got drawn off onto another show, Crazy Like a Fox, where I went on staff. I think we talked about that last time. Mm-hmm. But I always kept in touch with Mike, and over the next 5 or 6 years, he went from show to show. And typically he'd call me in to pitch to whatever the new show was, and then it would be canceled before anything happened. But then finally he landed on Star Trek Next Generation. Now, prior to this, I had I certainly had a long-standing interest in sci-fi and fantasy. As a kid, you know, I was into comic books. And then at some point in the early 90s, I wrote an episode of Superboy, a half-hour syndicated show. But that was almost at the end of that show's four-year run. So Mike called me in to Star Trek Next Gen. I didn't even have to contact him. And he, he thought I was particularly, that I had an imagination or whatever, that my Simon to Simon scripts reflected whatever sensibility he was looking for in writers for Star Trek Next Gen. So first he called me in for a rewrite of somebody else's script, and I did a couple of those, behind-the-scenes rewrites that I ended up not getting credit for, which I talk about in the book. A writer has a lot, does a lot of assignments that their name doesn't necessarily end up on, but yes, you get paid for it.
But money is still green, and the banks still accept it. So
that's right. So I never did end up with an on-screen credit on Star Trek Next Gen, but then by the time Deep Space Nine came along, which Mike co-created with Rick Berman, I was in on the ground floor of that. Again, I did a rewrite of somebody else's script to begin with. And then finally came in and pitched stories of my own and connected with one, an episode that was called Whispers, which aired in the show's second season, which I got a full written by credit on. And then jump ahead a few years, Star Trek Voyager, same deal. Mike co-created it, and he called me in right on the ground floor, and I pitched stories, and I got an assignment right away. I believe I was the first freelance writer to get an assignment on that show. And then again, I got pulled away onto other shows. So those were that was my involvement with the Star Trek universe, thanks to Mike Piller and my working on Simon and Simon, because that's how you get work in this industry. You do a good job for somebody, and they remember you, and they bring you onto another show that might be an entirely different genre. But that opened up a whole new world for me, which I then pursued a trajectory apart from the cops and PI shows that I've been doing up to that point.
Swords, Starships, and Superheroes, Paul Robert Coyle's memoir about his 40-year career writing for network television and syndicated, first-run syndicated television. Swords, Starships, and Superheroes, available in paperback and as an ebook through our friends at Jacobs Brown Media Group. You can also find it at Amazon.com, other online retailers. Okay, Whispers, which is the Deep Space Nine you mentioned a little while ago. Okay, that was the first one. And you correct me, the only Deep Space Nine where you have full credit for, but you were, I believe you worked on another Deep Space Nine that was a variation of The Prisoner?
Well, it was a first season episode called Move Along Home. It originally had a different title. Fans will remember it. It's kind of an infamous episode, not a particularly well-regarded one. And there's a reason for that, which I talk about in the book, I think. But this was Mike had written the story for this one, but for whatever reason, he didn't do his own script. He hired another freelancer to wrote a script. He wasn't happy with that. He brought me in to rewrite that particular writer. So I did a draft or two, and he wanted to open it up. This was a story where the characters are zapped into like a video game. So they're forced to play a series of life-threatening games to move on to the next level. And he wanted this to, he cited The Prisoner, which was the Patrick McGoohan show, mm-hmm. Film on location in Wales, I think, mm-hmm. made a very visual outcome. Tour mm-hmm. show, he wanted this to be in that style. The previous draft was all interior, so he wanted to open it up, and he gave me that job. So he was willing to go on location and shoot for 5 days. So I did that. I opened up the story, and I adjusted the characters' voices and made other dramatic changes within it. But then after I was done with it and moved on, suddenly he was told we can't afford to do this at all. So it was forced to move into a series of sets, a labyrinth that was all indoors and dark sets. And another team of writers came in and did that final draft. And then Mike himself did a production draft. So those are four or five writers, all fighting for credit. As the middle person in that group, I was very unlikely to come away with credit. Credit is granted by the Writers Guild,
yeah.
An arbitration committee that reads all the drafts of the various writers. Without knowing, the names of the writers. So it's anonymous and fair. Anyway, I was denied credit on that, but I did do a lot of work on it and got, made a fair amount of money off of that. And even though, my work was ultimately not used, a little of it emerged into the final product. Mike thought I did a good job, so that's why he was still open to hear more pitches from me. And by the way, the reason that episode, I think, is a little regarded by fans is because it was so interior and claustrophobic and frankly look cheap on television. And that's my take on it anyway. I thought it was a decent story and a, you know, worthwhile script. But then I came in and pitched stories and finally connected with the one that became Whispers, which became a very popular episode centered on the Colmini character, who was the Chief O'Brien on the show, who was a carryover character from Star Trek Next Gen. Then I got drawn away to other shows. I did continue to pitch. I had pitched to Deep Space Nine a third, what would have been my third episode, a story they really liked. And said, we were really going to do this, but we can't, and not yet, because we're backed up, you know. So they said, oh, keep calling in. So keep calling in, and we'll keep you appraised, or we'll call you. And they did. Every 3 or 4 months, I'd get a call from them saying, that story of yours is on the list, but not yet. Please, you know, stand by, be patient. And this went on for 2.5 years. And this was not unusual in the Star Trek universe. Yeah. They heard a lot of stories, and even the ones that they wanted to do, they couldn't do them all at once. So 2.5 years later, I got the call. We were finally ready to go ahead with this story, and I couldn't because I was on staff at Hercules at that time. So I did get paid for it, but again, that's something that I ended up without my name on it. So,
well,
basically, we're tackling 3 episodes of Deep Space Nine.
Yes, well, okay, 3 episodes of Deep Space Nine, only one with your name on it, but as we said earlier, you got paid for your time and your work, and you're recognized for your other stuff, and money is still green whether your name is on it or not. But before we move on, I understand that Whispers, the one that the Deep Space Nine that you wrote, that focused on Colmini, I understand Colmini really, really liked that script and let you know that.
Well, he let me know. I didn't go on the set of that one for whatever reason. I don't know why. I usually like to go by the sets of shows of mine that are shooting, but maybe I was involved with something else when it was filming, so I didn't get there. So I never met him at the time. So flash forward a few years. I'm on Hercules. I'm writing for Hercules and Xena, and I'm going to the conventions, and we had a big convention that year in Pasadena, and I was one of the speakers on stage, and a lot of the cast members were there, and Lucy and Kevin, I think, were there, had flown over from New Zealand. And I'm backstage, and our executive producer tugs me on the shirt and says, oh, somebody I want you to meet. And he brings me over, and here's Colmini, who was there because his son or daughter was a big fan of, you know, Hercules and Xena. And so, oh, Cole, nice to meet you. I wrote Whispers, and he was very, you know, that was a heavy episode for him. He was in every scene. Yeah, it was his total point of view. The twist at the end is that he's a clone who thinks he's a real O'Brien, but you know, he's really a programmed enemy agent to commit an assassination or something. So he was on camera more heavily in that episode than he had ever been, and he gave a terrific performance. So I got to meet him under those circumstances.
Yeah,
it's unusual. I usually meet the people on the set, but not that time.
Yeah, but it's a little side reward, a little bonus reward to find out not only to meet the actor, but to realize just how much he really appreciated what you wrote.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's always good to know, yeah. He's still very active. I see him in parts all the time, yeah.
Swords, starships, and superheroes from Star Trek to Xena to Hercules, A TV Writer's Life, Scripting the Stories of Heroes, available in paperback and as an ebook through our friends at Jacobs Brown Media Group. You can also find it Amazon.com, wherever books are sold online. Paul Robert Coyle is the author of Sword, Starships, and Superheroes. He is with us via Zoom today.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We mentioned this in the first half of our conversation. I'll mention this again. I've known Paul for the better part of 30 years. There are a lot of things I learned about Paul as a result of reading his book, and there are a number of things about television that I learned as a result of reading Swords, Starships, and Superheroes, one of which is something called character creation fees. This is something I didn't know about before. You got one with regard to when you worked on Jake and the Fat Man. You missed out on one with regard to Voyager. Tell our listeners what a character creation fee is.
Well, when a writer, when a freelance writer or a staff writer, when a writer of an individual episode of a show creates a character, with a guest star character within that 1 hour, and for whatever reason the producers decide to bring that character back in later episodes, either once or many times, the writer who originated that character gets a kind of a mini residual. It's called a character creation fee, and you get a payment for every time that character is used subsequently. Jake and the Fat Man, I wrote an episode that was the show's third season premiere, and they were in Hawaii at that point, and McCabe, the Bill Conrad character, had a new secretary, so I gave her a name, whatever her personality was, but they liked her and they continued to use her for the next 3 years on the show. So I got a payment every time that character appeared. On Hercules and Xena, there were multiple characters that we were always drawing from the universe of Greek gods. Yeah. So whatever writer would write the first one of those gods or characters would get payments from then on. In the case of Voyager, Star Trek Voyager, I pitched, as I say, I was the first writer to get a freelance assignment over there. And I pitched a story about, if you knew the background of the show, it was the ship got propelled billions of light years into a strange galaxy, and they're trying to find their way home. And there was an enemy crew that was incorporated into the main crew called the Maquis, kind of renegades who had broken off from the Federation, and now they're a part of the ship. So I said, well, what if one of those characters, and I gave her a name and said, oh, she's a, we think she's a Bajoran, but she's actually an enemy spy, a Cardassian, which was an enemy race who had infiltrated the Maquis mm-hmm. on a spy mission. So she's a bad guy, but she's among this group. But what do we do with her now that she's on Voyager? So, you know, my pillar really sparked to that idea. So that became the assignment. Ultimately, her name ended up being changed from whatever I had pitched. But the essence of what I just pitched is what that character became. And she became a hugely popular. The actress, Martha Hackett, was excellent. And she became a recurring villain on the show after she split from Voyager with some enemy aliens. They continued to chase Voyager for the next 5-6 years, right? And she recurred 12 times, I think. So I should have received 12 payments. But I didn't, because what happened was when they were doing my episode in the first season, they're saying, "Oh, this character Seska is such an important character. We don't want her coming out of the blue for Paul's story." So they seeded her into a few episodes before mine, just to establish her as a member of that Maquis crew. So whatever episode she was in the first time, whatever writer wrote that episode, and they were told to put this character in there, that writer lucked out with the next 12 or 13 character creation fees. It's, you know, look, I could have objected. I could have gone to the Writers Guild and made a case of it. But you can't fight every battle. You know, you have to pick.
You have to pick your battles. And as you related last time you were on, Paul, you win some, you lose some. So you may have lost out on that particular character creation fee, but there are other battles you won, one of which occurred around the same time. You did again, this is something I didn't know about. You did a British show for Gerry Anderson. You got a full overseas credit, written by credit, although you had to fight for that.
Well, you often have to fight for your credit in television, because as a freelancer, you're usually rewritten by staff, mm-hmm. and sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes the staff puts in their own names up for arbitration. Some producers are notorious for that. They yeah. want their name on everything, you know. So, but the Writers Guild protects, they're fair with doing arbitrations and giving credit where credit is due to the writer who really contributed the majority of work that ends up on screen. As far as that particular show is called Space Precinct. It was produced out of Out of England by Gerry Anderson, who did those puppet shows like Thunderbirds and so forth. And it starred an American, Ted Shackelford. At the time I was writing it, it hadn't been cast yet. It was supposed to have been Dennis Farina, and I was all excited about writing for Dennis Farina, but it ended up not being him for whatever reason. And it was a mix of puppets, sort of human puppets or, you know, aliens with bizarre animatronic operated heads and antenna, and the human actors played by Ted Shackelford and one or two others. Produced in England, but they went out of their way to hire American writers. I don't know why. They wanted the show to feel like Star Trek, I guess. It was a police precinct in space. So it was kind of Hill Street Blues meets Star Trek. And I was just coming off those recent Star Trek credits that I talked about. Yeah. So I got called into that show. They didn't even have offices here. They had a team of writer producers that they'd hired, but they operated out of their homes. So we'd be on the speakerphone to the people in England, but they were building the sets at that point. It was a big, they put a lot of money behind this show. Yeah. I didn't know what it was going to look like. By the time it finally aired, it was pretty freaky, but it had a big fan base of college kids. It aired at like 2 a.m, as many syndicated shows did in those days. And maybe it has its fans to this day. I don't know. It's not one I get asked about a lot, but I thought it was worth a chapter in the book. So if you remember Space Precinct, I have a few things to say about that show. I only did the one episode, but I think it turned out well. But yes, I had a fight for credit on that one, and I was awarded full written by.
And because it is a British show, it makes you an internationally renowned television writer.
If you say so. It's not one I've gotten a lot of residuals for over the years. I don't think I ever went into reruns.
Yes. Well, but again, I can say internationally renowned television writer, producer Paul River Coyle is with us via Zoom. Paul's memoir, Swords, Starships, and Superheroes, from Star Trek to Xena to Hercules, is the story of Paul's 40-plus year journey as a writer, story editor, and producer for network, cable, and syndicated television. Paul will be back next week to talk specifically about his years as a staff writer on Xena, Warrior Princess, and how that led to his writing for both Xena as well as Hercules, The Incredible Journeys. We'll play part 4 of our conversation with Paul Robert Coyle next week on TV Confidential. In the meantime, Swords, Starships, and Superheroes is available in paperback and as an ebook through Jacobs Brown Media Group. You can also find it Amazon.com, wherever books are sold online. We'll take a look at This Week in TV History right after this.
Story Salon is Los Angeles's longest running storytelling venue. We have live shows every Wednesday in Studio City, as well as solo shows, podcasts, CDs, and several books. Los Angeles Daily News calls Story Salon gemstones of narrative, something new, funny, astonishing. Sunset Magazine says tales tall, tragic, and tantalizing. All of this makes Story Salon one of the most eclectic entertainment experiences available. You can learn more about us by going to our Facebook page or by visiting our website at www.storysalon.com.
Accredited by Guinness World Records, welcome to Archival Television Audio Incorporated. A peerless TV soundtrack archive, preserving the audio from television's first 3 decades, the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, the golden and silver age of television.
For more information, go to atvaudio.com.
Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/tvconfidential, x.com/tvconfidential, or @tvconfidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.